Hello, this is Chaz from Quiet Speculation, and you're listening to the QS Cast. If you're a QS subscriber, you're hearing this as soon as it gets published. If you're not a subscriber, you had to wait a few days. If you want to listen to the podcast as soon as it's published, or you just want to know more about Quiet Speculation, go to quietspeculation.com/tour and check out everything we have to offer. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the QS Cast. We are introducing, well, reintroducing our vendor series. So it's about that time of the year again. We're going to have, as before, we're going to have store owners and as many owners and large vendors as we can on the cast as possible. Up this week, rejoining us, Avram, CEO and owner of Adventures On. What is up, Avram? Thanks for joining us again.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm just happy to be here and share some of my experience with the, you know, with the collectors and the speculators out there, especially with everything going on right now.
Yeah. So we have an outline that we, you know, there's a lot of talking points that not only yourself, but we would like to discuss, you know, with a large vendor like yourself. So I'm just going to quickly run through that. And again, really glad to have you back. I think, you know, the vendor series has been very popular. Everyone really clues into those and enjoys hearing the perspectives of large store owners, just from a, you know, meta perspective all the way down to what they like to buy and sell on a daily basis to everything, just general operations and stuff. I know you wanted to touch on a lot of things that were going on recently, the release of Iconic Masters and the upcoming Ixalan, the recent market frenzy of the reserve list, and you know, that will bring us into other various topics. But I know we wanted to discuss one kind of head on before we get into that. So, Avram, a lot of insiders use the Trader Tool service, buy list service, especially you're one of the vendors that folks use to buy list too. And for a while there was an issue with, you know, and there was a lot of reports. I don't know if it was widespread, so maybe you can clarify this a little bit, but they've been having difficulties with buy lists and being compensated for those buy lists. So let's just talk about this head on. What happened, and can you clarify that for us?
Well, I did have some pretty severe problems there for a while. I was trying to communicate with those customers. I was able to. It's first off, I'll say it's a lot more complicated on this end than people realize. And when, you know, things that are beyond your control kind of hit you all at once, it can really kind of snowball. And I had a lot of staff turnovers. I had a lot of just, you know, things going the wrong direction at the wrong time and having to train a lot of new people constantly, you know, going through them and then falling behind on stuff. And, you know, I wish everything was always going to be perfect. And I've been around for now, you know, almost 25 years as the store and over 10, you know, the online presence. So I don't plan on going anywhere, but things did get pretty difficult financially and just without enough hands to do everything. Things didn't quite get kept up to where I could easily resolve them. And as I was able to, you know, I'd get people taken care of, try to let them know what was going on. Most, if not, all of the main issues have been resolved now. And I urge anyone else who feels that if something slipped through the cracks, get a hold of us. We are still streamlining our new processes. We basically went through almost a completely restructure of everything. I mean, including the platform we used to sell. And it was almost like starting a new business. So it's just very overwhelming. And, you know, also had some, you know, financial impacts on there too, that kind of made it difficult to juggle everything. You know, very, you know, sorry about that. And it's been my goal to make sure that I don't go anywhere and anything that is outstanding or was outstanding is, you know, dealt with or getting dealt with, and everybody's going to be, you know, satisfied at the end of this, when it's all done. But the market has been pretty crazy. And, right now we're in a good upturn, so that's been helping. So hopefully, I mean, if you want me to go into any more detail, please let me know.
Well, yeah, I mean, from what it sounds like, it was just kind of a perfect storm of bad, you know, over, not merely oversights, but just you know, things that were out of your control all kind of happening at the same time. And I think, you know, from your end, is there anything that you really, I mean, you've been around for a long time, Avram, so I mean, I'm sure you've learned as much as you can in that time frame and seen a lot of stuff. But is this kind of a learning experience for you that when you go through these kind of periods, especially in a long, illustrious career in doing this and being in this market space, is there something that is in place now or being approved upon that this doesn't, you know, obviously it can't, you know, never say never, but that this kind of won't happen again in the future?
Gotcha. Well, basically, I've been, you know, bringing in new staff, getting retrained. We've got a new platform. We're using the TCG Player Pro system. That doesn't help with the buy list itself, but it does lower our costs dramatically. We did have to, unfortunately, kind of, you know, break ties with some, you know, very important people in the behind the scenes thing that not everybody was aware of, because the overhead, it was just the market changes, the cost to entry for competition has gone down tremendously. And a lot of the people that actually used to sell to us are now our competition. And so they're, you know, lowering prices in the marketplace on all of the not super hot trendy things. So we've had to literally change, almost literally completely change how we're doing business to be able to compete. And that's a huge factor to improve the cash flow, lower the outgoing expenses so we can, you know, meet, you know, the outgoing, you know, are basically the buy list costs more readily because our system is fairly automated, which is a very nice perk for the seller because they can just add it to the cart, send it in. They don't have to wait for constant verifications and things like that. But that also caused a little bit of a problem. So we also introduced some new policies to make it easier and more streamlined for the staff that's handling this to deal with the issues involved, which are micromanaging these buy lists when they come in dozens in a day and sometimes thousands of cards in one, you know, purchase. And then there's a lot of problems with that purchase. And not everyone is an expert seller. So we've had to kind of work out exactly how we're going to handle everything because dealing with it, you know, like I said, micromanaging it, it was just spiraling out of control. So there was a, you know, contact issue with the customer, working out the negotiation with the condition issues. The market, because the game has been around for so long now, it's more reasonable that more cards that get sent in won't be in near mint condition. But because of some of the prices, that could be a huge impact on the actual value to us, and our offers are all based off of near mint. And so at times we don't get contacted back from the customer in a timely fashion. And then we have to, you know, kind of spirals in a weird direction. So we've basically kind of reworked how we're approaching all of it, redone all of our policies, tried to update all those on the website, and been basically, you know, as the new staff is coming on and they're getting to the point where we can have them help with this, we're getting the hands back in there so we can keep up with it. And then also, like I said, by changing our entire platform and a lot of the behind the scenes expenses, we were able to lower our costs to back down to where we're not having to just kind of, you know, barely keep up or sometimes be behind and then that causing other problems because that, you know, long term, I'm not going to get into all the details, but businesses, you can't not pay certain things. And the customers are the most important thing because you don't survive without them. But sometimes something will come up where if you don't take care of that, you're done. And so we've been resolving those issues as well to make sure that everything is getting rock solid again. All of the new buy lists, there's a very quick turnaround. For quite a while now, everything is staying pretty clean. As far as I know, the only thing that's still a bit of a problem, and it's something I can't control, is when we have to make a new offer because there's some significant issues with the card sent in, and the customer doesn't check their email or, you know, doesn't get back to us. We can't just go, oh yeah, they're going to take that lower price. You know, no, we need to hold on to the stuff. We need to make sure we can return it and we can keep the lines of communication open. And so I've been making sure that everything moving forward has been just as clean as absolutely possible while we're still kind of, I guess, sifting through the mess that happened before. You know, it's almost kind of like, you know, earthquake hit and we're like, okay, we're rebuilding over here and, you know, everything's going to be really clean and set up really well. But now we have to kind of go through and dissect everything. What did we miss? You know, who's not getting back to us? You know, where did we, you know, where have we not fixed something yet? So I definitely, you know, urge anyone who thinks that we still have unfinished business, please get a hold of us. But remember that we are still, you know, resolving stuff from the past. But everything currently, as far as I know, it's been super clean. And we've been having a lot of regular buy list sales, a lot of familiar names, and haven't had any real issues that I know of on anything for quite a while. So, yeah, please, you know, let me know if you want anything more specified. I believe in transparency.
Well, that's good. And I mean, a lot of issues can be resolved by transparency. I know even from you coming on the show, you've been one of the transparent vendors. You all have. So I think it's good that we discuss that. It seems that you guys are working back towards some sense of normalcy here. And I think folks, just because the service was, you know, what it was, and people were accustomed having good service, that suddenly it was an issue, and rightfully so. I mean, but if things are out of your hands and there's a lot of a rebuilding process, then kind of just is what it is until it's kind of back to the level that you wanted it.
Said, I think on all the newer sales, it's been pretty very fast turnaround, very few problems. There hasn't been as many, because one of the things we're going to be talking about today is just the way the market's been shifting. Part of that is also how the buy list offers shift. And at times, we made some mistakes and put in some pretty high offers on things that we thought were stronger in the marketplace than they were. And we got inundated with large amounts of them, which is not necessarily a problem all the time. But when it's a tremendously large value in lowered condition, then it becomes a very big issue to deal with the customer. And that we actually had a very large amount of, I guess, professional buy list users that were, you know, I'm sure with the best of intentions, dumping, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of dollars of lower condition, you know, moderately played, heavily played, damaged cards on us, expecting 100% of the buy list offer. And then contesting our offer and not responding quickly and causing a lot of extra issues. Now, I don't want to use that as an excuse, because we still have to handle whatever happens, we need to handle it. But that is also why we had to kind of redo all of our policies, readdress how we're dealing with that. But it did really kind of, it cost us a lot of money and time that could have been better spent dealing with just fixing everything instead of having to break down, you know, that particular side of things. But that was a huge impact too. That hasn't been happening. We've really cleaned up our buy list to remove those cards that were causing a problem.
Fair enough. So I think we kind of covered that. Folks, I would urge you to get in contact with Avram if, like you said, have unfinished business and continue to resume using the service. And I really do hope at some point you kind of, sounds like you've resolved a lot of it and continue to, you know, get back to the place that we know the service can be at.
For the most part, yeah. Like I said, I think it's just there's finding the last bits that we may have missed. And I only say that because, to be realistic, sometimes you don't know until it comes up.
Yeah.
So I can never say it's perfect. I can just say I'm doing the best I can, and talk to me if you feel that we missed you.
Fair. So let's kind of go through some of the, I mean, you mentioned one of those factors in this kind of whole experience. You wanted to bring this up in one of your topics. So this will kind of be our first topic here. You wanted to kind of cover collector versus speculator and kind of the shifting of the market. And I believe you used the term chaos.
Yes.
in the more recent, I guess, market movement, a lot of cards have kind of gone a bit of haywire and more, you know, kind of focusing in, it was kind of the reserve list. But now with more sets being released, like two being released in like a few months of each other, there was also kind of that thrown into the mix as well, as, you know, key reprints happening. I'm sure you got a lot of dump offs of those cards. So it was a lot to take on at once. So let's kind of navigate through that a little bit. So you had some thoughts on what has happened. So I'd like for you to at least, you know, discuss those, and then we can talk about it.
Okay, yeah. Well, a lot of older sets, you know, Arabian Nights, Legends, Antiquity specifically, you know, had so many low price cards that didn't see play and may never see play for so long that finally stocks dwindled to low enough. And there's so many investors and speculators in the market that a lot of people wisely started to buy up the higher grade condition of those cards. And then it went nuts and people bought every condition. Prices were spiking. We were even selling damaged. We have almost never stocked damaged cards for the majority of our time in business. And in the last year, we have grown our damage section larger than I ever thought it could be. And that just goes to show you that sometimes, you know, people just need the cards. They're going to pay a fair price for it, no matter what the condition is, if they can play with it, because it's a playing game. But then you have cards that don't see play because they're just not very good. They were made at a point where the designers really didn't have it. You know, it was more flavor than function. And now the speculators and investors are, they're seeing those prices going up, you know, 100 times overnight. They want a piece of that action. Well, there's definitely a way you can make money, but you want to buy in on the low side because it's not necessarily the vendors that are going to, you know, make a ton of money right away. The buy lists aren't going to automatically start buying all these cards in any condition. So I want to caution people, be careful that you're not just buying it because everybody else is buying it. You can sit on it and you can do this long term and you use buy lists and you use, you know, sites like Quiet Speculation to kind of see where the market's going and you have the time to sell at the right time. You can definitely make money buying a lot of these older, scarcer cards, even if they're not good for play use. But if you don't have that outlet to move them, be careful about just buying them to buy them, because you're buying them at an inflated price. And if no one's playing with them in, you know, Commander or, you know, Vintage or Legacy or even Casual, you know, the long-term sale ability is just really low and the prices are going to just drop back down. I've seen that happen with all of those sets. But right now, there's a lot of movement on Fallen Empires, Mirage, Stronghold, Tempest, Visions, and Weatherlight. Pretty much all pre-modern sets. Rares are going. The best buys, I think, once again, if you look at playability, Ixalan is going to be a ton of fun with dinosaurs and pirates. So Wizards actually went back and eroded a lot of the older cards that didn't really have a real creature type. It was just kind of generic, like beast or, you know, something that just really didn't gel with anything else. And now there's a lot of specific pirate and dinosaur cards in those older sets. And people are buying them because they want to build those decks. That's the best investment, is when you can buy what people are playing when they're still cheap. So right now, be careful about just buying it to buy it. But if it looks like it's a neat playable card, it might go in a tribal deck. Has a neat ability, may not have enough combinations of cards out there just yet, but it has a really cool ability. Those are the ones that you really want to speculate on. And long term, it's great. Short term, watch out. Make sure you have an outlet to sell them. You know, you get in a little cheap, goes up, sell it before the buying stops. So kind of a mouthful there.
Yeah. And I don't know. You've been in the market for a while now, and this almost kind of seems like a yearly, you know, annual thing that, like, here we go again, all these cards start to increase, even the, like you mentioned, the cards, you know, that don't really see play. And the community around here in this Discord, and we talked about this to pretty much ad nauseum at this point, I don't think it was really about buying stuff to buy it. Obviously, we had a lot of feedback, and there was a lot of discussion via the social airways and debates and what have you that, oh, you know, this is not real, and oh, they're just, you know, buying up these cards that are bad and all that, and that very well may be true. Some of these cards aren't, you know, in to my view, aren't as lucrative as, say, the Gaia's Cradles, the Vorash Strongholds, you know, the kind of the marquee cards. The issue is, this is the way I kind of saw it, is that it almost doesn't even matter. You're not really comparing one card to another. in the reserve list, that you, the reserve list is almost being treated as its own entity. And if these cards, because they're never being reprinted, because like you said, the supply has dwindled so down, you were selling damaged copies. I mean, I was even seeing some reports that folks were selling damaged copies of these cards for significantly more than they bought them for, just because these people want the card, you know, these buyers want the card to play with. I mean, how much longer can you find for a fair price or at older prices now, you know, these Angus McKenzie's or Adun Oakenshields or these random cards like Cleanse or Cleansing or Knowledge Vault and stuff like that? They might not all be the greatest of cards, but they're unique enough that folks were buying them and felt that the floor of those cards shouldn't be like under a dollar, under $2, that they should be significantly more because they shouldn't be treated as normal cards in Magic the Gathering. I mean, and it made exactly. sense.
They're playable. They're playable. They may not be, you know, the rock stars, but they're playable. This, what I was saying, goes to the ones that are not.
Well, yeah, I mean, at still though, it felt that even borderline cards, like I even saw like Kukamesa Pirates not too long ago. Like, yeah, that card is a tribal card. It's not the greatest of cards, but it just happened that there was, you know, a reason to play those cards again. I mean, people, I don't really felt needed a huge reason to play these cards as long as they just wanted the cards to own or play for whatever reason. So to me, it didn't really, while everyone was debating the reasoning behind this and all of these cards are not real and why are people buying these cards, it honestly doesn't even matter why. It really didn't matter why. And it was a large discussion over the course of days, weeks, I think, you know, months at this point, that we would see certain cards trend and almost like more cards would start trending and more cards would start trending. And we were kind of just reacting to what we were seeing, that, you know, the buying frenzy didn't slow down. I mean, even if you look at interest right now, you could still see a lot of reserveless cards continue to increase because there's just, I mean, if folks wanted an Angus McKenzie, now they're paying double or maybe, or at least double at this point, very soon, because there's just not many of them. And like you said, in a good condition, if they really want the perfect condition of these cards left. So that's why you even mentioned yourself that a lot of these damaged or slightly played or heavily played cards were starting to move even for these older reserveless cards, because there's just not, there's no more of them. So I even personally, you know, even bought a couple of the older Legends cards for older prices that were not near mint at all, just because I wanted to have them. So if I was feeling that way, I could bet that a lot of people would feel that way too.
Yeah, that's what I was saying about the playability versus not playability. Cards are going to go up by supply and demand regardless. So if collectors absorb them, even if they're not playable, that is going to be a good long-term benefit, especially for high grade. Once you go, you get away from the, okay, well, I don't actually want to play that. I probably never will want to play that. That's when moderately played in lower condition usually doesn't really move, because the players aren't going to care and the collectors are going to want better.
Right.
So I, you know, I agree with you, as long as there's a reason, and that's what playing is so important. If people enjoy playing, they're going to keep playing and this market's going to be strong. When it's no more fun, there's not enough stores to support it, or Wizards isn't supporting the rules well enough, then it's going to go backwards. But they're doing a tremendous amount of things right now that are benefiting supporting the game. And I think this is a really good time, you know, to get into play, to get these cards while they're less expensive, when you want them to play with. For reselling, that's a totally different animal. It's like, why are you doing that? That's where you have to kind of break down each of the reasonings.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think a good reason, and a good thing to have these vendor casts is because a lot of us kind of debate and talk about all these, you know, what happens in this marketplace, but ultimately a lot of these cards end up back in buy list hands and vendors' hands. So let me kind of confirm this with you. I mean, you just mentioned yourself, I mean, selling damaged cards at a rate that you never thought possible. When you see stuff like this happen in the market and folks are sending, do you feel confident enough to offer more on a buy list? Because, you know, the whole thing, these cards are not real. No one's buying these. They're not, these prices won't hold. There was a lot of confirmation from other buy lists or a lot of other insiders here for sure. And other folks, even on the social airways, that said, hey, listen, I was able to buy list this card for X amount more. So what was that like? I mean, I know there was, you know, for a while an issue there, but were you, like, what were you evaluating to offer more on, or were you just staying away from this entirely?
I think the way I was trying to explain it about the reasoning behind the demand, if I felt it was a true demand, it was honestly being supported by the players for long term, I raised the buy list price. I put buy list offers up when I may not have had them before. I went deep into my archives of you know, my stockpile of cards that I've acquired over the years and dug out those. I'm glad I never threw those away because they were so trash copies, and put them up for sale to see how real this was. And, you know, there's I play the game too. I actually played it for a long time, and I've played with a lot of good players, and I've played with a lot of fun players. And if it looks like it'll be fun, whether it's fun tournament or fun casual or fun EDH or fun poker, I want it on my buy list if I don't have it, because then I'm not doing my job. The way I put it is, it's, you know, talking to a player slash collector is, I tell them, it's your job to have fun. It's my job to make sure you have fun by getting you the cards. You can't do your job if I don't do my job. And so that's what I look at is this something that I can actually flip at a reasonable margin by putting it on the buy list, and I'm going to have that demand. If I feel it, I'm going to put it on there. If it's going up because of the spikes and I feel that it's not out of control, I'll put it on there. I'll raise my buy list offer. I feel there are a lot of people out there who've just had collections and sell out of them. And I, you know, there's a lot of semi-professional, you know, buy list, you know, vendors. They're not, you know, they don't want to do a website. They have a real job. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, just, you can't play this game and just buy everything. You have to trade. You have to do things. You have to network, and you have to navigate, and you have to hustle a little bit, because it's really expensive at times. And so there's a lot of people just over the years have acquired stuff from their friends getting out, or, you know, seeing a list, you know, saw a collection on Craigslist or eBay and getting lucky. And then they go, well, I don't need all this stuff, but I need this other stuff, or I need some cash. And those people have been around for years, and they all have stuff, and they check buy lists. Those are the people that I like to sell in the most, because they're reasonable. They're experienced. They've done it before. They know how to package things. They understand about condition. They're very easy to handle. Some of the newer speculators are a little bit too aggressive and get very abusive when you're going, hey, this is like damaged. Why are you sending me this? I need to like either not buy it or, you know, lower the price. And then they just get a little unglued. But really, I guess, you know, to summarize what I just said, as long as I feel the long-term demand is there and I can get it at a fair price based off of the fluidity of the prices, I'm going to do it. If I feel that it's a fake demand because it's just somebody went, oh, there's not very many of these, I'm just going to buy them all. And the card has no relevance in anything other than a random set somebody might be building, then I'm going to stay away from it because the price is going to go back down.
So what was your verdict then? Or what did you have specific examples? Like, did you overall deem this not really a real demand here? Or there was enough that you felt, you know, hey, I mean, all of these reserve list now cards are suddenly increasing. And a lot of them, you know, this is real, contrary to what folks were saying. Were there any specific examples that you had, or was this just an overall, like, this is just folks trying to buy out the market kind of scenario?
Generally, if I felt it was a card, like I said, that had true demand over time, I would go with a much more aggressive buy list offer. But I would do a buy list offer that I didn't have a sufficient lightly played or moderately played or heavily played condition cards available. Because you can't always get near mint of, you know, Arabians, you know, Antiquities Legends as an example, coming in all the time. So I always work with people on the buy list. If they send in an LP or an MP and it's actually at a fair margin or the card's gone up in price, I don't actually make a lower offer on it. I only make a lower offer if it's significantly impacting the value versus what I'm paying, you know, at that time. But overall, this is exactly the same thing I've been doing for years, but it's much more condensed, so it's harder to keep track of it because it's happening faster. You know, whereas something would start to pick up in popularity and it might go over the space of, you know, weeks to a month or several months of activity between people starting to buy it up, it going up in price, you know, us doing a buy list offer or a higher buy list offer, getting them in, selling them at the higher price, and then the market saturation point hitting. Now, that could literally happen, with the exception of the buy list side, that could happen in the space of hours of just that sudden sheer demand, everything getting absorbed up, shipped out, you know, the next day, and then we restock a whole bunch of the stuff, try to come in at the right price, and then nothing, no sales. And it's like, wow, really that fast? So that's also when we know, okay, don't adjust the buy list big time when the sales go away that quick. When they maintain and they're being ordered by regular players and regular collectors, we know the stores or the buyout guys, or, you know, whatever name that guy again, you know. And when we see those orders, we go, okay, maybe they have something, maybe they don't. We do a little bit of research, and based off of that research and our sale over the next few days, 2 weeks, we will then adjust according to. And then, of course, you know, looking at the larger market, and we have, even though we've been doing it for a long time, we don't dictate the prices. The market does. But we have our finger on the pulse most of the time. And if we're not certain, we check over here, we check over there, you know, and that's kind of what, you know, quiet speculation it helps with, is helps people navigate those. Is this real? Is this not? What's really going on? Who's, you know, buying, who's selling? And it's so helpful. The faster it happens, the more tools everyone needs to help them understand. So
where does my name pop up? What category does my name fall under when you see it?
Well, I think you just help people understand, you know, because you can get this information, and if you can't interpret it, it doesn't mean anything. Right. It's overwhelming. And so when you have people like me and other, you know, other people, and you chat through the different, you know, ways that you connect out there to the people, you just help them make sense of it and how it applies to them, because that's really what matters, is how do all of these things apply to each, to the player, to the collector, to the speculator, to the long-term collector. You know, who wants to spend $5,000 to sit on it for 20 years? Not everybody can do that, you know.
Right.
So by helping make sense of it, that's where this all comes together, and it becomes a community instead of just a market.
So, kind of final take, I know you kind of see here, and I know you mentioned it, you are more recommending higher grade at this point, even though the kind of the prices have drastically taken off. And, you know, what was one card that you thought was really surprising that ended up selling well amidst all this kind of frenzy?
Well, basically just looking at, I mean, it's those three sets, I kind of focused on, you know, Arabian Legends Antiquities, because the obvious cards have already been obvious for years. So many of the other cards are just so horrible for play use, and there's so many better options out there, that just to still see, you know, some of those cards that used to be, you know, 10 cents each, now going for $5, you know, used to be $5, now going for $150. Those, it's just, how many people are going to, you know, really want to buy that in hopes that it's going to go up? It's, if they're going to buy it to play with it because it's on the reserve list, it's not going to have another copy come out. Okay, that's more understandable. If it has a neat ability that just hasn't had enough cards together yet to make it good, that's not a bad idea either. But when it's just a subpar playing card and it's in lower grade, it's harder for me to recommend it. When it's a subpar playing card and it's high grade, well, the collectors are always going to want it. There's just not very many out there, and there's less and less of them going to be in high grade over the years. It's a really good investment. Playable cards, any condition at this point in the game, if it only has one printing and they may or may not ever print it again, it's probably a decent investment as long as you're not coming in at the top price. If you can get it, you know, at the lower end, and you're going to do something with it, you trade a lot, you know, people who want to build played sets instead of near mint sets, all of a sudden it becomes a pretty good deal for you. And some of the other sets after that, like the Fallen, Mirage, Stronghold, Tempest, Visions, and Weatherlight, because of the pirates and dinosaurs that have been eroded in there to be those creature types. Plus, there's a lot of neat cards that have been overlooked for years. Those are great investments, you know, in any condition.
All right. So let's move along to a more to another topic, another kind of fun topic that you want to bring up, because apparently you're really into Ixalan there. You like your pirates and dinosaurs. That's
yes.
for sure.
Well, honestly, think about it. For years, it's been goblins and elves and vampires and you know what else? what else? It's kind of like clerics sometimes. You know, some people have really stretched for years to come up with a new tribe or to do a new spin on one of the old tribes, and now all of a sudden, dinosaurs and pirates together. Holy cow! You know, we're talking about some of the more popular movie franchises of the last decade now having impact in you know, one of the more popular playing games, you know, in the last decade, you know, and then they're also bringing back Opt, which is just ridiculous. Turn that into something modern, needed another card draw. So it's just, this set is going to have a lot of impact on casual and competitive play. I haven't seen a set with this much buzz, actual, real, I want to play this, I want to do this to play, instead of just, did you hear about that card? It's going to be worth some money. It's actually, this is the set, probably, I can't remember when a set was so, created so much of a buzz for playing than Ixalan. And it's just so exciting. It really is.
Yeah, so we have Ixalan. We also have Iconic Masters. I will let Tarkan, since I see Tarkan kind of joined in here, kick that off as well. What's up, Tark?
Hey, guys.
Hey, welcome.
Apologies. I had some issues this morning, so I'm a little behind, but I've been in the room here listening. So, Ixalan, yes. The question that I have regarding this is, this kind of takes me back to when Innistrad kind of released, and I mean, it felt like that was the first time in a long time that they really just knocked out the park with flavor and the whole horror element, and this feels very Innistrad to me. Even the power level of the cards and everything is just so flavorful. Do you kind of agree with that? Do you think that we have sort of another, and we saw how well that set kind of went with players and you know, the power levels from the cards. Is this sort of something similar?
I think you hit it on the head that it would be the previous set or block that really kind of got people interested in playing again. But I think this is even more so because it envelops the entire scope of the game, because now it delves back into these old sets, and all of a sudden cards like Magmasaur, oh, that's a dinosaur, you know, and Pirate Ship, there's a bunch of things that were eroded to be pirates and dinosaurs. And so now it just kind of like, all of a sudden it just has this wider impact. So it's definitely, it's just going to be a blockbuster.
Are you seeing that through sales and pre-orders? Like, is there data supporting that this thing has really got some hype behind it?
Well, from talking to my customers and players in the store, which I've been spending a lot of time in again recently, is just they just keep talking about on this, and I want to do this, and you know, Pirate's going to be competitive and standard, and you know, and I think what do you think about dinosaurs? Everybody's just talking about it, and then the demand on all of the cards that were already pirates or dinosaurs or eroded to such are just seeing a ton of sales, and not just in buyout quantities, but just across the board. And all of the cards that would support those decks, Commander or otherwise, it's the data is real. It's not just a few people buying every copy they can.
And are you finding that, like, for example, your box pre-orders, is there a noticeable, you know, difference in this? Or, I mean, is this sort of par for course, like, you know, all the recent sets have been doing fairly well. But I mean, I'm just curious if there's any points as far as sales numbers that are indicating like, wow, this one seems to be somewhat of could be an outlier.
We've been getting extremely positive support on our pre-sales on boxes and other, you know, products. Part of that in due because Wizards is really pushing some promotional sides of things to help with that. So, of course, that kind of skews the data a little bit. But just the fact that they're supporting it so heavily and they believe in it so much, I just think that it just really supports it. And as I mentioned, Opt, bringing that into Modern, it's just mind-blower. It's huge, huge for Modern.
And are you happy there's no Masterpiece?
Actually, yes. I know that sounds strange because, you know, from a vendor saying, I don't want that free money. Well, you know what? I don't want a situation where cards are devalued and they're not special anymore. So anytime they don't overprint or continue something that has been getting a lesser of an impact, I support that because it should be based off of actual demand of play and fun and the collectors. That's where the real value is. Just saying, hey, that's shiny, so it's worth a lot, isn't necessarily going to do anything. And honestly, I like them holding that back for when it makes sense. And that way it'll keep it special. All the older ones are going to hold their value and go back up as they get absorbed. People will realize, hey, this is a good thing. And it's not going to be flooded. You know, the market won't be flooded with this special, so therefore it's not special type card type.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to me because, you know, the last time obviously was Shadows of Innistrad, and that was sort of a, I don't want to say a throwback, so I mean, it was sort of a franchise play on their part, you know, going back to Innistrad. This is the first time we have a brand new plane, in, you know, with no masterpieces. I'm very curious to see how the, you know, the values of cards go and the value of the box. I mean, what do you think is going to happen there? Do you think we're finally going to go back to, like, you know, the estimated value of a box being, you know, a decent price, thanks to no masterpieces and just the popularity of the set? Like, do you have any kind of predictions with that?
Well, the I believe, I can't remember exactly what everybody's calling them, but they're the new flip cards. Some of which are very reminiscent of older, out-of-print, very expensive cards, like Gaea's Cradle has a, that's what everybody's calling. I don't even remember the name of the card because it's the new Gaea's Cradle. That's what it is, you know? Right. And those are actually going to be spreading out the mythics a little bit. So some of the cards will be a little harder to get. So it's not going to be like you crack a case and you just get everything and it's going to be devalued. And I think that there's just so much playability on all levels of play that is just going to absorb the sealed product and the single cards. More people will open boxes because they will have someone to sell it to instead of just open it quick, get rid of it as cheap as you can, but still make money before the market bottoms out until, you know, 2 months in and then cards start going back up. I think this is just going to be, this is going to be similar to Zendikar in sales. Like I think Innistrad was definitely a good example of the demand and the interest it created, but the sales were nothing like the original Zendikar. And that was just because it was so many playable cards across the board of all rarities that just the world absorbed it like a sponge. I went through my salesman at one of my distributors. He called me one day and he went, you know, this is in Zendikar, of course, so it's been a while. But he called me within like the first 4 weeks of release and he said, you know, you just cracked I looked at the numbers and you bought over 1,000 boxes of Zendikar already. And I'm like, oh, cool. Okay. And that's wow. Just ridiculous. You know, well, that just from him, I actually had gotten plenty from the Wizards direct, you know, supply and other distributors because, you know, but yeah, that's what I'm saying is the demand was so ridiculous because it was playable across the board for everything. I mean, you look at Zendikar, we may never have a set like that again because it had, you know, the fetches and, you know, it just, I mean, the depth of that set is ridiculous. But with Ixalan, I can't guarantee it's going to be just as deep. But from what I'm hearing and I'm feeling, that it's going to spark a similar type of just people wanting to play, having fun, absorbing the product for the right reasons. And that is the best investment that you can ever make is in fun, you know, and that long term is going to be pretty solid, I think, for all those reasons.
Are there any cards specifically that you like from the set that you're looking at as far as, yeah, it's not necessarily speculation, but you think have, you know, a lot of potential, whether it be in standard or you know, that the our listeners should kind of be paying attention to?
I at this moment, I think that the obvious stuff is already being talked about, and I don't want to sound like a broken record there because, you know, like the Gaea's Cradle card and, you know, the different counter pieces that are in there. And then, of course, you know, the obvious stuff, but it's the things that obvious that I'm just like anybody else, I have to play with it first to really kind of see the depth of it. So I'm hoping that I'll actually be able to do some pre-release stuff or, you know, the release online release events, so I can really kind of answer that question better. Because right now, I'm saying what everybody else is saying. This looks great. That looks great. But they're doing such a good job of designing stuff that's deeper, that has a little bit more combination of cards before you really realize its potential. And they're just doing a good job. I think that's healthy for the game, that we don't figure it all out in 5 minutes. And I wish I could give you a better answer than that. But look for that to increase with their new, they've been getting a lot of better testers in and designers in. So I think that's just going to, that side of things is just going to get better.
And here's something regarding kind of standard in general that I was curious to get your perspective on since we're talking about Ixalan. I've noticed there's been this interesting, it seems like there's been this over time, past year I would say, this kind of uptick in demand for standard foils, which before, I don't know if that's because, like I've noticed a lot of buy lists are higher than usual for standard foils. And, you know, traditionally, that was something that you'd say, well, you know, standard foils, and most people don't really care. And a lot of times, I mean, I've seen it where prices were about the same. You know, a standard non-foil would be the same price. It was $10, you buy the foil $10. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore. Are you noticing sort of, you know, as a vendor, that there's been this, that there's this slowly this increase in standard, in demand for standard foils?
Yeah, yes and no. I think it is definitely just because there's this whole subclass, and I mean, I don't mean that as a negative. I mean, as in, not everyone enjoys foils for whatever reason, but there is a large class of players that really enjoy foils, and they're more available than they used to be. Not necessarily cheap, because they're still scarce. And so it doesn't feel so bad to foil out your deck, because it won't cost you $1,000 anymore, but they'll hold their value when the rotation happens, and especially if anything ends up seeing play in Modern, or an EDH. So it's almost like you're rewarding yourself for foiling out your deck. They're affordable for the most part because they're reasonably available, but they're not commonly available. So the price never really goes down on them. And so it's almost like back to what it used to be when there just wasn't as much availability of cards. They held their value better. And I think that's a large part of it, is just people, they don't have that, oh, rotation is coming, so my collection's worthless. It's not, all my stuff's spoiled, I'm good. You know?
Yeah, I actually think that you made a good point there. I think that EDH, I think the growing demand in EDH means people go, well, let me get this in foil because I also want to play it in my EDH deck. Or, you know, or if it's somebody that's interested in collectability as well, they go, well, you know, I'm playing this in standard, and you know what, there's a good chance it might end up being valuable in EDH, so let me hold it. So that's what I was thinking. I was thinking that the increase in EDH demands, maybe there was a correlation there, because obviously people love to foil their EDH decks. And granted, you only need one card, but still, you know, with more people playing EDH, that just means that, you know, a lot more of these cards tend to be banned.
And there's no rotation, so it's not like those people are going to dump their parts of their collection over time. They just keep them. Yeah. And yeah.
Chaz, is there anything else on Ixalan that you want to talk about?
No, I think we talked about a lot of it already, and I think Avram really had a good point that, you know, the cards that folks pretty much are talking about already are definitely going to be a known quantity at this point. I mean, I posted, you know, all my standard testing notes up yesterday or the day before. I can't remember now. Maybe it was yesterday. And, you know, I do think without masterpieces, there will be cards that can retain value a little better, because, you know, we have the data to back that up. You look at Shadows over Innistrad block, it's not unheard of that, you know, there could be multiple mythics over $10, and rares that are close to $10. So where, you know, you look at sets with masterpieces, I mean, it would be, you know, kind of awkward, you know, not really awkward, but it would be like, you wouldn't even see a mythic barely even scratching like $10, let alone $15. It just wasn't there. The value wasn't there with all the masterpieces. So I think that's adding to what Avram talked about, is that not only is that there's a lot of buzz and hype about, you know, this, just how this set is constructed and all these different cards that can see play across multiple different formats. But you know, a lot of those cards will retain the value when they purchase them.
Also, there's a certain point in time about 3 weeks after a set's release where everything is at the least expensive, if those people, those players can afford to get a full player set of everything, and anything goes up, they've got their player set, and that's where they get their value back. If anything goes down, there's going to be so much stuff that goes up, it doesn't matter. Not everyone can do that, but that's honestly my recommendation to anyone who's concerned about missing the boat, is just get your player set when everything is at the lowest point, and it's traditionally usually about 3 weeks to 4 weeks in. Then things start going back up as stuff gets figured out and product isn't opened as frequently.
One thing I do foresee. Oh, go ahead.
What's that?
I was saying, to that point, they pushed the Pro Tour back, right?
Yeah, it's pushed back.
Time for product to be open and for people to kind of figure out. I mean, granted, a lot of, you know, there's going to be a lot of protesting, a lot of results of Magic Online to indicate where the metagame is going and what to be played and whatnot. But, you know, to that point, Avram, you know, you've got a lot more time of product being open for things to kind of work right.
Yeah. It's not a horrible time. time zone this time too, so I won't be literally like a mummified zombie this time. We'll be covering that, just so for everyone that's listening. The Pro Tour, sorry.
Yes.
Yeah, but one thing I do see, I don't know if you've put up singles yet, Avram, but another thing that I will, you know, looking back at Shadow's block, that, you know, kind of the conclusion I brought to, you know, came to as well, and I kind of see this happening as well, very similarly, is the price tags that are, you know, attached to cards right now will just kind of swap as folks, you know, as these cards fall in and out of favor and what is actually real and what is not. I don't think, you know, when you look at a card like Carnage Tyrant, I'll use this for an example. It's the most expensive card in the set right now, as of right now as we're recording. It's not out of the realm of a, you know, $25, even $30 mythic in a set like this. If Chandra, you know, you look at even Chandra, it's still kind of holding strong at 25 in a masterpiece set. It's really not out of the realm. We saw a Liliana of the Last Hope. Now, this card is not Liliana of the Last Hope, but that doesn't mean it doesn't have to be Liliana of the Last Hope to have a $30 price tag. It just has to be good in the context of the standard it is in.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just see a lot of those price tags flip-flopping.
We'll
so there, I think that's kind of everything we wanted to talk about. If there's one card, Avram, that you see, I know you want to test a lot of cards, but what is one card that you're like, man, I really need to have a lot of this stock, especially early on when players are coming in to buy this stuff to play standard or what have you?
It's honestly, I wish I was more prepared on that side, because what I used to do versus what I do now, I used to take pre-sales on singles really early on. And I would open, you know, tremendous amounts of product, and I would track all of the sales and the trends, and I would, you know, restock, you know, I would pre-sell a certain amount and then restock at a higher price. And I would really just constantly scrutinize the cards and compare their demand versus their abilities. And by the time the set released, I'm like, you know, I could tell you, you know, every single card of value, what it was, what, you know, why it was. And now the market is just so fickle. And there's so much availability, and then there's also so much uncertainty, because a lot of players go, well, I don't know yet, but the availability is going to be there, so I can wait. And so I've kind of been doing the same thing, going, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and wait on pre-sales and singles. I don't have to overcommit on sealed product. I don't have to overcommit on selling some cards way too many for way too little, because somebody figured it out a week into it instead of, you know, when I started selling them. And now at this point, I just start reading all the same reports everybody else does and watching my players and talking to people about it. And I get it all pretty quick, but I don't get it as fast as I used to, because I found a lot of that was just wasted effort on my part, because no matter how much I know about this, I don't tell people how much it's worth. They tell me by how much they're willing to pay me for it and how many copies they want. And right now, the ones that they're talking about are just really mostly the flip cards and Jace. Vraska, tiny bit, but really just a lot of the flip cards. I can't tell you how many times people I've heard the term, you know, the gayest cradle card. but yeah, sorry, like I said, I wish I was a little bit more prepared.
No,
on
it's fair. I think we covered all the topics that we wanted to cover. I know we're coming up. We don't want to keep you too long. Avram, we appreciate all the time that you're giving us so far. So we're kind of trending towards, you know, the wrap-up part. But was there anything final kind of words you wanted to say on that, Tark?
I'm just curious, and I'm assuming you guys didn't address this too much. Magic Arena, the new arena. Did you guys go into that at all?
No, we didn't.
I know you probably don't deal with digital space too much, but I'm just curious if you've been thinking about, you know, that game and how it's going to affect, you know, the audience in general, and if you think it's a net positive overall. And just
I think it's a net positive overall. I definitely have got I'll try to keep it quick. I actually signed up for the early beta testing. They'll let me know if I can get in early. I've got all the cards to hand out at the pre-releases to offer to my players. I'm going to support it whole hog, because you can't always play in real life, but the social interaction is that part you can't get online as well. But also you can't learn the game as easily these days, because with 20 plus years of rules adjustments and errata and all the complexities, you just have to play more often. And these kinds of platforms are wonderful to get new players in, draw them over from other games that they might be playing online, giving them a chance to then experience it, want to come in and play it for real life. And we're going to get a huge surge. I honestly believe we're going to get a huge surge of people that have heard about it now because it's been around for so long. Oh, I know somebody. Everybody knows someone that plays Magic now, whereas it used to be, what's that? Well, pretty soon it's going to be everybody. I bought some packs of that at once, or somebody showed me how to play once. And Arena and, you know, all the different Xbox and different platforms that they've come out with, all of those are all pushing the exposure up and giving all these people the chance to have fun with it. And I think that it's going to help continue to grow the game so we can keep having more podcasts like this, because, well, it just, the market just keeps surging.
Awesome.
I agree.
I'm curious, because, you know, a lot of people, including, well, Chaz, I think you're on the side that eventually is going to be a Magic Online replacement, right?
I said this on the other cast. I don't see how this was built from the ground up not to be added onto. I don't know. I think it would take some time. I think they're going to see really how successful it can be. But there's no way they came together and designed this game not to be expanded on. I just don't think that happened. Like, they certainly could have built this to be expanded on, have more formats and what have you. And if they need to add onto it, they definitely will.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I just don't think that it's... I think the way that Magic Online... Look, of course, if they go, wow, like, if the numbers support it, that makes sense. But the problem is that, to my knowledge, as far as I'm understanding it, it's a sort of free-to-play with, like, these little microtransaction system.
Economy. It's like Hearthstone.
It's Hearthstone, right. So I just don't see that... Like, the economy right now for Magic Online is so robust. They make so much money. They're not just going to get rid of that until the math works out with Arena. I just think that's going to take some time. Evram, I don't know if you're familiar enough with Magic Online. Do you agree with that? Do you think it's this? You think they're sort of feeling this out to see if it's going to be a
replacement? And I know I just wanted to jump in real quick, and this frame your response, Abram, though, too. Like, what other online game do you know of, especially these days, that, hey, go pay $10 for an account, then you basically get no cards, and all the cards that you have to buy are from a third party, like, bot chains? Like, what game do you know that is built like that these days? I just don't see how it might take a little bit a little while, granted, but I just don't see how MTG Arena doesn't outpace the MTGO model when all the transactions are going back into Wizard's pocket. Like, literally everything that you are buying on Magic Arena, whether it be packs or whatever, or however I'm assuming it'll be very similar to Hearthstone, like, all of that money is going back to them, where they don't have these third-party bot chains and all this different stuff and play points and all this, how it's set up. Like, no game is set up like that anymore. Even the Pokemon TCG has been around for a long time, and that's not even set up like that. And I felt like that was the most successful way to bridge a large paper following that they've had and an online following that they've had. I would think Magic Arena goes that route before it ever goes back to the way MTGO is built the way it is now.
I personally, I have played, you know, MTGO on and off very seriously. I've even run bots for a while, and I've thought about a lot of these things, and I realized that it is really sistered well for the competitive players to really get what they can't always get because they have a job. They can't always go to the card shop. They can't always meet that other competitive player and get better. And so Magic Online, from the people I've talked to, now I'm sure there's a large community that also goes up to play for fun, but just the general feedback I've gotten from people is, if you want to play for fun, you don't play Magic Online. If you want to play and you want to get better and you want to do PTQs and you want to qualify and you just don't have time to play, but you want, you know, you want to taste that victory and you want to get, you know, more aggressive, that's what MTGO is for. And then, of course, then all the complaints about the problems with it, which we won't delve into, because if you've done it, you know it. If you haven't, I don't wish it upon you, because that would be mean. Magic Arena, in theory, will allow the competitive player to do what they want to do without getting run over, without having to spend way too much money buying from bots or having their collection picked over, without realizing that when you have a full open trade list to a bot, they're going to give you nothing, basically. A couple of cards you might get a decent price for, but if you blindly trade, you're giving up. It's horrible for the casual player. And I think Arena is going to get new people in a good way. As you said, Wizards is going to make money, so they're going to want to support it. I don't know if it ever could supplant MTGO, because I think it's kind of going for a different market. And that's just kind of, that's where I'm at. And we'll see what happens. I haven't played it yet, so, you know, they might have more things to it.
I agree with you, Abram. That's kind of my position. Is I don't think it's going to... I agree with all the points that are being made, and I do agree that it's going to have a huge impact, and it's something that's been needed. I just don't... I don't think it's going to be replacing MTGO or Magic Online anytime soon. And look, it's just... You just look at their track record with Magic Online. Look how long it took. I mean, that platform still is broken in some ways, but look how long it took for them to come up with something like Arena that could, you know, be a competitor in that space and whatnot. I don't think you're going to see Magic Online going anywhere anytime soon. But yeah, I just wanted to get your perspective. I know, you know, we've been talking about that. So that's going to be a big thing for Magic. So, you know, I just thought it was important to kind of touch
on. Huge meta perspective. It's going to be great for players and the market and, you know, buying and selling alike.
It's going to want to get people out into the stores to play.
Yep. Last thing, everyone, before we wrap this up, you know, we had you on last time. It was awesome, and we asked you this before, and I'd love to. I kind of just would like to close this out with you every time we have you, just to see how the industry's going. But is Magic thriving? Is it alive and is it growing? And do you just see a bright future as we continue to plug along? I think we spoke with you about this maybe 8 months, almost a year ago last time. So I just want to see.
I see only good things to come. I spoke to someone yesterday about this specifically. I said, you know, when Wizards is calculating their reprints to not mess up the market, they're not overprinting, they're not over, you know, they're not undervaluing things, they're being very careful to protect and nurture all the formats, and they're listening to the feedback, and they're really pushing it. That's when we know that it's really healthy, because that costs them time and money to do, and that's not easy to get that from any kind of manufacturer, any kind of support. If we see a point where they just start pumping out stuff and doing huge cash grabs, like if they were to try to, you know, break the reserved list and just start reprinting things in mass, we know we're going to be through some rough times. But they're doing so many things that are healthy for the game and supporting it while making money, because they need to. And it's making a lot of us money too, which is it needs to. So the support that they're going to get from us and the players and the fun with, this is just going to keep growing, and things like Arena are going to bring in thousands, if not tens of thousands, and potentially millions of more fans. There's only good times to come, at least for the foreseeable future.
Well, good. All right. That is a positive note to end on.
Yep. Avram, really appreciate it. I know you had one very last thing. We are definitely wrapping it up, but you wanted the opportunity to talk about something a little bit more, more personal to you.
Yes.
That you're trying to promote this as, you know, as in many places as you can. Please go ahead and divulge that to us.
Yes, you know, want to end on a positive note, and really, I guess another positive note is the support that the Magic community as a whole gives to those, you know, in it. And someone, his name is John Hill. Some people know him as Q-Ball. He's been in the Sacramento area. A lot of people know him from the local area, working at a denials auction for over 20 years. And he's just really gone to a lot of stores and he plays and he knows a lot of people. And he was just diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. Literally last week. And so myself and at least another store in the local area, a Place to Game specifically, we're going to be hosting some fundraiser events to help John and his family, because obviously this is very hard for him to work right now. And his, you know, and he and his family are going to need help with dealing with just everything. Is a lot comes along with this kind of diagnosis. And so we're going to be getting more information out there. We just started planning it, so we don't have dates, but we're looking at October before anything is going to happen. We have also, if I may mention more names, Match Play's online presence. He also now has a store in Texas. Eric, great guy. He's been a long-term friend of John. He's going to be providing a tremendous amount of prize support for these events. And we're also going to be putting up a lot of, auction items. Well, not auction items. I'm sorry, raffle items that people can buy, raffle tickets. So you don't just have to show up and beat everybody to get these cool prizes, but there's going to be a lot of different ways. And I'm sure there'll also be some type of crowdfunding thing. Once we have all that information, we'll get it out there in social media. And if you knew John or know of John or just want to help the information, just check it out. Look for information from, you know, myself, in the Sacramento area, Adventures in Comics and Games, Yuba, Marysville area, A Place to Game, and then, you know, from Match Play in Texas. And he's also does all the Grand Prix and stuff. So if anybody wants to help out, it would go a long way. And it's just a testament to the community, just how well everybody comes together when somebody really needs help. And just thank you for the time to say that. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And that's one thing that this community has shown time and again, that we really do take care of our own. We will cross promote that, as you know, as soon as you know, you let us know, and we will cross promote that for you. Abram, really appreciate everything that is being done. If you, again, if you know that, you know, if you're in that area, go out and support, do whatever you can. Or even if you don't, there's ways that you can support. Abram, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, you know, obviously adventuresonline.com and, of course, the Facebook, or Adventures in Comics and Games Facebook page. I haven't really done a lot of social media for the Adventures On page. We're all pretty much teamed up with blackborder.com and let them do, you know, the article and a lot of that different type of stuff. And we've, you know, they're kind of winding down things now, so you won't see as much up there, but our buy list and link to our site. But like I said, it contacts us through the Adventures in Comics and Games Facebook page. We'll have all that information up as soon as we know. We'll be cross-promoting the other event, and we'll be posting all of the raffle prizes and all of the prize support that Eric has been can be kind enough to donate. Like I said, we've all been a part of the community for well over 20 years, and we all have known John forever. And he's also just really worked hard for the community. And it's just yeah, it's just important to me that he, you know, he gets supported just like everybody else wants to be supported when something goes, you know, doesn't go the best. And yeah. We just appreciate that.
Question really quick from an insider that's listening. Does he have a donation page?
That's what I have to find out.
Okay.
Because I don't have his mother's direct contact information. So I've been talking to Jason and Eric through Facebook. And we're going to be getting more stuff worked out, and I want to get that started and get that information out there immediately, because that's something that a lot of people are going to be able to help with that couldn't get down to our areas to participate in the event. And like I said, we want to make it a lot about the fun of it, not just about I got first prize, so I got something. No, I want to get stuff into everybody's hands that shows up. Want to get, you know, plenty of raffle prizes out there and just have a really good time and a celebration of the game and the community, and you know, and to take care of John or Q-Ball, awesome. As like I said, a lot of people know him as.
Awesome. Tark?
Yep. At @V_Tark on Twitter. I'm also over at the MTG Finance Central Facebook page. You can chat with me there anytime, and as usual, I work with US.
I work with US also. You can find my articles on there on the Classified Speculation Insider page or non-insider page. I pretty much do it all over there at ChazVMTG on Twitter. And you can find me on the QS Insider Discord. And if you want to hear me twice a week, you can go and check out my other podcasts on mtggoldfish.com. That is going to wrap it up. Avram, we will do this again soon. Thank you so much for joining us again and kicking off the Vendor Series.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, re-kicking it off, yeah. hope everything's well. This is going to be the QS Cast signing out. Thank you all, and hope everyone enjoys the Vendor Series again. Take care, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
All right, take care.